actually, this is something that's mainstream now.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
Oh, it's going to go 100%, but I believe
it's going to go.
It's 100%, yeah. The whole thing is going to go. We have to build a temple.
So we have the priest, we have the red heifer, we have the land, and we have everything ready. We just need to wait another.
When somebody comes over a fence mm-hmm. and goes into someone's house mm-hmm. and...
That's something that's hidden. It's out there, right?
Yeah, this is all on their website.
In it, they detail that the Temple Mount rightfully belongs to the Jews.
Seconds, he was like spit on I don't know how many times.
In the first 5 minutes, he was spat at 5 times by Orthodox Jewish Israelis.
You believe that if there was no control, they would come out of here and kill you all.
Brothers and sisters, we've all had loved ones that passed away. A mother, a father, a brother, a sister, a close family member. But one of the mercies of our deen is that with the right intention, we can go ahead and continue to do good deeds on our loved ones' behalf.
And what greater of a continuous good deed, sadaqah jariyah, than investing on their behalf in the deen center, a masjid and mega dawah center that will benefit generations to come, inshallah. So click the link below, donate right now. May God Almighty Allah reward all of you.
I have an exciting episode for you for my next guest. He is from the Propaganda & Co. Ahmed.
Religious beliefs of the world's most influential religions regarding the final destiny of mankind, known as eschatology.
Ahmed, he's been helping to debunk many of the lies that people like Dr. Phil.
When somebody comes over a fence,
much of the mainstream media is constantly repeating. We're going to be talking about the rebuilding of the Third Temple, the Red Cows.
Plans of numerous right-wing Israeli groups who believe that a red cow must be sacrificed in order for the Jews to progress plans to demolish the Al-Aqsa Mosque and build the fabled Third Temple in its place. It might sound like a conspiracy theory, but hardliner Israeli group The Temple Institute have already purchased and imported 5 red Angus heifers from Texas.
The engineering of prophecies and much more with my next guest, Ahmed.
Islam, this is the Deen Show.
Girl, I love you very much. I love the work that you're doing.
When I was ready to talk about it, I would only talk to you.
And I was explaining how much respect I have for the faith of Islam.
Welcome to the Deen Show. The Deen Show.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
How are you doing?
Alhamdulillah, I'm doing well.
How you been?
I've been great. Thank you for having me here.
We're here at the Deen Center.
It's beautiful. It's coming together very nicely. May Allah reward you for your effort, inshallah.
Ameen. Thank you, brother. So I was really intrigued that I saw some of your work.
Are converging onto a single point, a single event that could have ramifications so great that it brings about the end of the world as we know it. And it all starts.
I was really just fascinated because I was thinking, like, imagine if the KKK, or imagine if ISIS, or some other extreme organization was plotting something that can set off events that would lead to World War III. What would the majority of human beings, the media, they'd be talking about is trying to stop it, at least you think. Mm. But you were reporting on an event that is the like of what I just mentioned, an example, and it's like, no big deal, hey.
Yeah, absolutely. Zionists, you know, with their level of influence in the West, the amount of, you know, money that they have and the way they leverage that money.
Hold on, brother, listen. Are you some Jew hater or something you're talking about?
No, I don't believe that I am, although I'm sure I've been told that many times, whether directly to my face or indirectly online.
Does your religion teach you to hate a certain group of people because they're Jewish or Christian?
No, my faith does not teach me to hate anyone.
Okay, I just want to make a caveat there. Okay, go ahead.
No, I appreciate that context.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. The Zionists, unfortunately, have, you know, acquired cover for a lot of the crimes that they commit. And the Zionists, you know, range from secular atheists all the way to far right-wing beyond Orthodox even. These are people who are just extremists, and they take confused scripture very literally, and they are connecting that to, you know, certain politicians, elected members of parliament in the Israeli Knesset, which is the parliament, and they're using those connections to acquire more and more resources and power so they can bring about these, like, apocalyptic events that you're alluding to, mm-hmm. which is essentially the topic of the Red Heifer video that we produced and is about the reconstruction of the Third Temple as a whole.
And this is not something that's some fringe group that, oh, come on, man, this is just something like you always have radicals, they're a small minority. This is something that you report, this is mainstream now. It went from being something fringe to actually this is something that's mainstream now.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
Oh, it's going to go 100%, but I believe
it's going to go.
It's 100%, yeah. The whole thing is going to go. We have to build a temple.
The Temple Institute actually have 9 pure priests, and they are pure, and they are waiting. So we have the priest, we have the red heifer, we have the land, and we have everything ready. We just need to wait another.
In one of the clips that you see in the video we made, there is somebody saying exactly that, that, you know, 20 years ago, you never would have imagined, you know, members of parliament in the Israeli Knesset saying openly, we are going to reconstruct the Third Temple. And now he said there are dozens, you know, many, and I don't know if it's the majority, but a sizable portion of the parliament talking openly about this.
This is like, it's mind blowing. They're literally like, this is like right in front of your face. Mm-hmm. Even the Temple Institute, they're also, their purpose message is not hide, it's not something that's hidden, it's out there, right?
Yeah, this is all on their website.
In it, they detail that the Temple Mount rightfully belongs to the Jews, that the Palestinians are the modern people of Amalek, a tribe which the Jews destroyed thousands of years ago.
Temple Mount was back in Jewish hands. It rekindled hope for a long-awaited Third Temple.
The Six-Day War was a miracle of biblical proportions and was a cataclysmic opening of a new era for Israel and for the whole world.
God spoke to Moses and Aaron saying, "This is the ritual law that God has commanded instruct the children of Israel to bring you a red cow without blemish, in which there is no defect, and on which no yoke has been laid." So it says that we're supposed to take a perfectly red cow with no white hairs or dark hairs at all, and a cow that no yoke has ever been on. So as a result, it's very, very rare to find a baby cow that is completely red.
Most of the research I've done really just came from watching a lot of publicly available YouTube videos, much of it produced by the Christian Broadcasting Network here in America. So it's not just Zionists in Israel talking about this, it's evangelical Christian Zionists in America that are excited about this and documenting it and watching it very closely. But it's also right on their website, on the Temple Institute. They talk openly about their mission to bring about the Third Temple. And they want to do that, you know, one of the steps, there are many steps, but the key step right now is the sacrifice of the red heifer.
I want to touch upon, because you brought up Zionists and then Christian Zionists, mm-hmm. and the unholy relationship between the two. Mm-hmm. You touch upon this. This is really a strange, you call it unholy relationship. One group is now coming, waiting. They want the Dajjal to come. The Antichrist, the Dajjal, which we talk about, the Antichrist and what goes on from there.
Why does this group, the Temple Institute and other Zionist Jews of Israel, why do they want to bring the Third Temple? Why do they want to sacrifice the red heifer? Because they believe in their faith that the Messiah has not yet arrived. And this is the key difference between Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, right? We disagree on who the Messiah is, essentially. They think the Messiah has not come yet, and the Messiah will come once the Third Temple is rebuilt. And when the Third Temple comes, they believe that the Messiah will essentially rule over the world, and non-Jews will be slaves to them, that we will be their slaves. And the Christians, the evangelical Christian Zionists, have an unholy alliance with these people. They also want the Third Temple to be built, but they don't believe the same thing they believe. They believe there will be a different outcome. So they're both heading in the same direction, and they're holding hands moving in that direction. But the Christian Zionists believe that actually the Messiah that will return is Jesus. And when Jesus comes back, he's going to either convert the remaining Jews to Christianity or murder them. So this is why I describe it as an unholy alliance. They're both very aware about the difference of opinion, but they use each other to get to where they believe will be their intended and desired outcome.
Yeah, and that's just ironic, because here, obviously, we love and revere Jesus as a mighty messenger. We believe he was the Messiah, translated Christ. This is anointed one. We believe in him, the miracles he did. We don't believe he's a God, literal son of God. But we love him, respect him, peace be upon him.
Absolutely.
But then the other group, the Zionists here, they actually curse him, his mother, mm-hmm. and it's just like you can't repeat the things that are said.
Yes.
Right? So it's like, okay, you'd be best friends and supporting someone who's cursing your mother, mm-hmm. calling her all sorts of derogatory names. You wouldn't. I don't think anybody would do that, right? You love your mother. Mm-hmm. But Jesus, who you say is your God, and now you're actually holding hands, funding And going beyond, you know, limits, it's just ironic. It's just really mind-blowing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's baffling. I think it just goes to show, like, the confused relationship between Western Christianity and what they call Judeo-Christian values, which is like a made-up term.
Made-up term
in the last century. And it's an unholy alliance. And they're very confused.
I had a pastor on, Pastor Rick, he's a senior pastor, and he talks about this. This is a made-up concept, this whole Judea. And people just, you know, they swallow what they're fed. They don't really go deeper. But this is one of the pastors, and many Christians are, thank God, some are starting to wake up to this. And he talks about dispensationalism. He talks about the rapture. He talks about these forced made-up prophecies, starting from John Nelson Darby. Later on, you had the Schofield-ism that started from the teachings of John Nelson Darby. Schofield was a con man. He went to jail. And as the pastor explains, he ended up taking these fringe teachings from John Nelson Darby. And then what happened, they got funded by the American Zionist Organization, pushed it out to UK printing press, and they pushed 1 million copies. Because in this Schofield Bible, they have the exegesis, the explanation of certain verses that many use to justify what's happening, not into the support. This is like their belief system, so they feel like guilty for not supporting it, because it's sinful now, according to this version of this Bible. But then the pastor says, this has nothing, for the first 1800 years of Christianity, had nothing to do with Christianity at all. So many Christians have been duped into this.
There's a manipulation of the religion itself in order to justify a very deluded and deranged political goal.
And this is, you talk about, this is another thing. This is not, I mean, again, stressing the point that they're really preparing. This is the third holy site for Muslims, the Masjid al-Aqsa. And now, if this happens, it's going to set off, you know, events that no person, no American wants to send their tax-paying dollars to go ahead and fund something like this if they really knew what the bottom line is. And this is what you talk about. This is going to set off kind of events that are beyond like anything that you can imagine. Like,
right. And, you know, I don't want to sound like I want to see the violence, but I describe it as setting off a chain of catastrophic events. But to set off a chain of catastrophic events, Muslims in the region have to actually care enough about Al-Aqsa. Basically, if they want to reconstruct the Third Temple, they have to reconstruct it on the Al-Aqsa compound, as you've alluded to. And they actually would like to see the entire compound removed, but in their 3D models that they present online, they show only the Dome of the Rock being removed. So this is how they will gradually take Al-Aqsa. This is how they plan to do it. They'll say, well, the Dome of the Rock, yeah, sure, that's where, you know, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, ascended to heaven on the night journey. But this is not actually a site that you need. The Al-Aqsa Masjid will remain intact, but in the center, there'll be the temple, and we'll share the property. This is how they think they'll gradually take it. But they want to put the third temple in that site, and if Muslims don't care enough, and we've seen Muslim nations in the region, these corrupt leaders, unfortunately, completely abandon and betray the Muslim cause, the Palestinian cause. And in fact, they tried to apply pressure, the UAE and Saudi Arabia tried to apply pressure onto the Jordanian king to give up custodianship of Al-Aqsa, because technically, even though it's under Israeli occupation, the Jordanian kingdom, the Jordanian government, has custodianship of Al-Aqsa compound.
Yes.
The Saudis wanted to say, give us the custodianship, because then they can leverage it with negotiations, with normalization with the Israelis. Alhamdulillah, Jordan said no. But so if Muslims themselves don't care, then there won't be a catastrophic event. So we don't want to see the catastrophic event,
no, not
but I hope that as Muslims we do care enough, right?
Yeah, and another important thing is, I mean, like Muslim scholars that I've talked to, and we just know this generally, this is not something, prophecies are things that come naturally. Like, they're not things that are engineered and forced, because these cows are GMO cows, aren't they?
From what I understand, yes, they're genetically modified, yeah. Which is not that high, I don't know the level of sophistication, but you know how people breed dogs over and over and over again to get a certain feature?
Yes.
So they may have done it like this, or they may have actually in a lab genetically modified. I'm not sure exactly what they did, but it's not naturally occurring, that's for sure.
Yeah, so you're really like pushing it. You're really wanting to, there's, it's like when I guessed, I had a Dr. Oman on recently, and he said something interesting. He says, you got to really think of the psyche of a person who really, they're trying to force the end of times.
Mm.
They're like trying to really make it come.
Mm.
And that's the scary thing. At what cost? Diamond cutting. They've got even prepared the ornaments that are. This helps you understand to what level. Like you have to those rocks that will be placed. Diamond cutting instruments that they're using. The ornaments that are going to go into the third temple. That's already like okay. I'm going to land grab this house, and I already got my furniture. I'm going to put in there. So everything is like set.
Yeah, exactly. So imagine, you know, you have this property here that you are renovating. And imagine before you renovated it, you had everything from the furniture to the ornaments to the lighting, everything complete. The moment you take the building, how quick would you bring it about into completion, right? So that's how they're preparing for the destruction of Al-Aqsa. And they even, you'll hear certain rabbis, extreme rabbis and others comment, well, we don't know how Al-Aqsa could disappear. Maybe there's an earthquake. They all suggest the possibility of an earthquake. And of course, underneath Al-Aqsa, what are they doing? They're excavating for archaeological digs. Some people believe that they're deliberately weakening the foundation to bring about an accidental collapse, which they'll blame on an earthquake. How do you prove whether it was an actual earthquake or not? None of us will be able to. So that's how these people are kind of operating. And they hope that once they bring about the destruction, they'll very quickly come in, change the legal code, bring about the third temple. They have all the tools they need. When you talked about diamond cutting, and we should talk about this in some more detail, but basically in Judaism, they have a lot of rules, and the rules are very complicated, and there's difference of opinion of what those rules are, but they're very detailed. One of those rules is about the one thing, the core thing you have to understand about their intention to bring about the third temple is they cannot do it unless they are absolutely pure. Everything about the construction has to be pure. The person has to be pure. The products have to be pure. The stones have to be pure. So God commanded the Jews, you're not allowed to use traditional metal or iron carving tools to cut out the stones. So they use a special kind of diamond cutting tool, which technically is a loophole. It's not the metal cutting tool, so they can carve the stones, and those stones, which are now carved and ready, they can use that to quickly assemble the temple. And that's the point of slaughtering the red heifer, because the process of slaughtering the heifer is also very detailed. So they have special kind of priests. These priests have to be pure. Yeah. They've never come into contact with the dead. They have a direct bloodline, supposedly, to Harun alayhi salam, the brother of Prophet Musa alayhi salam. And they believe that these people have to be pure. The tools they use have to be pure. They have to slaughter the heifer on the Mount of Olives, which is a hill east of Al-Aqsa. So they have to be at the top of the hill, slaughtering the heifer, looking at Al-Aqsa. And then they'll burn the heifer. And they take these ashes and they mix it with water from a special spring nearby, a holy spring. I think the Spring of David, something like that. And this creates an ablution water, kind of like wudu. So the idea is that anyone who wants to actually go to the temple, because it's a sin if you're impure as a Jew, to go to step foot on the temple, the holy of the holy places, they call it. It's the holiest place in their faith. You cannot step foot there if you're impure. So you have to do a wudu with this red heifer ash water, and then you have to quarantine for 7 days. It's a whole intricate process. And after 7 days, you're pure. Now you can step foot, and now you can start building. So that's what this is all about, is basically obtaining purification, and the heifer gives them the purification.
And this is something where, okay, you talked about the weakening of the structure, the ornaments, everything is being prepared, the red heifers. When do you see this happening? What are they saying? Because they have to be 3 years old?
Something like that. They have to be like between 3 and 4 years old. So they recently came of age. March or April of this year.
They recently came of age. So what happens now? Because you got a timeline. They can't. Many regulations and rules.
Correct. Yes, you're absolutely right. There are so many regulations and rules. One of those rules is that you have to slaughter them within a certain age. It's like a prepubescent age. So they reach an age of maturity or puberty, I guess you could say. But when they mature into adulthood, they no longer qualify. So there's a short window of time. It's about 1 year. You know, the heifers, as they grow, they constantly check them to make sure they remain purely red. They can have a single strand of black hair or white hair, that's fine. But if there are two strands next to each other, disqualified. Mm-hmm. So assuming that they have, and apparently, from what I know, they reached age and they're still pure. Now, in 6 months, they might lose the purification. So if they wait, they run the risk of them becoming impure and disqualifying itself for slaughtering. So they can go about this in a couple of ways. They can slaughter it now. They had a conference about 2 months ago or 6 weeks ago at a settlement called Shiloh. And this Shiloh settlement is in the West Bank near Ramallah, near the Silwad villages and whatnot. And at this settlement, they have the heifers. So it's no longer a secret location. We know where they're held. And they had a conference there and they were talking very openly. They have the bridge ready. They have everything ready that they need to do this. They alter everything. And they were literally just discussing when. And it's a very long conference. I watched portions of it. It's available online. It's Google translated. It's not a bad translation to understand what they discuss because it's all in Hebrew. But essentially what they came to the conclusion of is this is not a good time to do it. There's already a lot of tension. If they do this, it'll just like ignite the entire region. And so they're waiting now. Now, they can wait 6 months. They can wait a year. They could do it by like next spring. Or they could decide, you know what? These will become disqualified. As long as we breed them, their offspring should theoretically still be red. So they might say, let's run the risk and wait 4 or 5 more years to have offspring. Those offspring mature in 4 or 5 years or 3 years from now, we can try then.
So third option, delay.
Third option is delay, but they take the risk. Maybe they breed them and they come out not pure. They don't come out as purely red. So that's a risk. And I don't think it's a risk they're willing to take. No. If I had to guess, I think they would try later this year.
Because now you have a position of people who are in the same mindset in this committee, parliament, and whatnot, because also politically things can change, right? And they got some people who are more level-headed and say, hold on, we're not supporting this.
That's an excellent point. You're absolutely right. They have a unique opportunity with how far right and extreme the government is. I mean, all of Israeli society is to the right, but these people are like insane fanatics. Ben-Gavir and Smotrich, these guys are devout believers in this cause specifically.
And I want people to understand, when you say really extreme, I mean, this was a person, the one that you just mentioned, that you had a man, and anyone, a Christian can be extreme, a Muslim, they can have, you know, from any religion, this happened to be a Jew, he went into a mosque and he shot up, what, like how many, 29, killed 29 worshipers?
That wasn't Ben-Gavir himself.
That was the person that Ben-Gavir put his picture in his office.
Yes, that's what I'm talking and about. And he spoke at his memorial as well.
Exactly.
Yes. This is the person who slaughtered at the Hebron, Ibrahimi Mosque in Khalil, in Hebron. And actually, this was, you know, one of the reasons for the existence of the armed resistance groups today, because that event was very traumatizing for Muslims. Mm-hmm. You know, this person went in and just slaughtered people while praying. It's a very disgusting act. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Ben-Gavir honors and glorifies this person regularly.
And not just him. I mean, it's a great percentage of the country that do.
Yeah,
and some are even on the fence, like, okay, is it like sinful to question it or something? They hold him to like a high ranking, like he's like, you know, some icon, like a martyr.
He's a hero.
He's a hero, yeah.
And in the past, you know, they silently supported him.
Yeah.
But now they openly support him.
I want to touch upon this because the people who've been deluded, programmed to support such a thing, and it's very unfortunate that you have some Christians now that... You also had the Christian Broadcasting Network. When they sent out a priest in disguise, in the first 5 seconds, he was like spit on, I don't know how many times. You know about this, right?
Yes.
Recently, Israeli Channel 13 reporter Yossi Eli went undercover as a priest for a day. Dressed in a robe, he walked through the old city with Franciscan Father Alberto. In the first 5 minutes, he was spat at 5 times by Orthodox Jewish Israelis.
This is a common occurrence. So you're supporting this. And this is good information here for Christians and Jews and other people to know that if they don't, because many people are not studying history, but when you study history, when Muslims were ruling Jerusalem at one point, you didn't have these issues of people stealing each other's land. Mm. There were this constant stress of war in this area as far as between the two sides. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had Muslims ruling and there was a relative peace. Mm. There was a peace because Muslims had established justice, and Muslims actually repopulated Umar radiallahu anhu, the Khalifa from there. He ends up repopulating, this is historically accurate, bringing the Jews back after the Christians had banned the Jews from Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. The Muslims brought the Jews back.
Mm-hmm. So, they did, yeah. And historically in the region, Muslims were very welcoming to the Jews. When the Jews were kicked out of Spain, Muslims welcomed them into their lands. And it's not to suggest that it was always perfect, but it's not to the extent that the Zionist Jews of today, they try to revise history and change history and say, you guys were always horrible to us. And this is not the case whatsoever, and especially in comparison to Europe. The Middle East was paradise for Jews, really. They could practice openly, and many high-ranking Muslim leaders had Jewish doctors, philosophers part of their court. They funded their work. They did business with Jewish merchants. Jewish advisor Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi, one of the most famous Jewish theologians and philosophers from Spain, was Salah ad-Din's advisor, his doctor, his philosopher, and Salah ad-Din funded his work. And his name is Maimonides. And Maimonides, actually, much of the interpretations of the red heifer comes from who? From his work. He did the fiqh, the jurisprudence, the interpretations and the tafsir, you could say, of Jewish theology about the red heifer. It was Maimonides. And who funded that? Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi. So Muslims were very welcoming to Jews in the Middle East. Again, not to suggest everything was perfect. Of course, you have cases of corruption and etc. But across the board, generally, Muslims were very welcoming and just toward Jews, because we believe Jews, just like Christians, are people of the book. So we have differences of opinion, of course, when it comes to the faith, and God will ultimately judge between us all when we pass from this world. But Muslims, despite the differences and despite the historical tensions like the Crusades and whatnot, still have a tremendous amount of respect for the people of the book, the Christians, the Jews, and our shared prophets.
Mm-hmm. And you have so many, it's one thing us talking about it, but you have so many academics, Jewish academics, who come out and say, like David Warnstein and others, who say Islam saved the Jewish people. Mm. If it wasn't for Islam, they would be extinct, because you had the Christians who were trying to, or they were actually the ones trying to eradicate them.
Yes.
And you see so many projections, people projecting things onto the Muslim community. One important point, and I think this is such important history that has to be retaught, has to be brought back to the surface, because it's not, they're trying to erase this, not talk about it, hide it, whatever, it's there. And another important point is for Christians, how many years was it now? You have the key for the Holy Sepulchre, the holy churches to the Christians now, the sacred place in Jerusalem. The key's in the Muslims' hands to protect those churches from Christians fighting each other.
Yes.
This is also something that's really most Christians don't talk about.
Yeah, I think, but that's starting to change, as you described earlier. People are starting to wake up to this. They're starting to wake up to the idea that Judeo-Christian values is made up and it's strange, and they're starting to question America's relationship with Israel. And Christians are at the forefront of this in America. There's a movement, a significant movement of Americans, Christian conservatives, waking up saying, should we really be putting Israel first above our interests? This is a very significant movement. It's growing. And so that's something I think to pay attention to. And I think, Christians are waking up to this. One thing I want to point out, I'm sure you have a Christian audience as well. They might be surprised to hear that, evangelical Christians want to bring about the Third Temple, because for them, they think, I'm not interested as a Christian to bring about the Third Temple, because within Christianity itself, there's a wide gap or a difference of opinion. Some of these Christians believe Jesus is the temple. So when Jesus returns, then technically the Third Temple has returned. We don't need a physical place. So there's a big difference of opinion, and it's, to be precise, it's the evangelical Christian Zionists who want to bring about the Third Temple. And a good example of this Christian Zionist would be guys like Mike Pence, former Vice President of the United States. I believe that's Mike Pence. I forget his name exactly. And there are a lot of these like Republican evangelical Christian Zionists.
Mm-hmm. So this has been cleared up. This is something that you can research. This is a fact. So whoever wants to continue to believe something, they're believing a lie. I'm going to let you listen to this clip. And because he's also gotten involved now.
When somebody comes over a fence mm-hmm. and goes into someone's house mm-hmm. and burns their infant mm-hmm. in its crib.
Do y'all feel like the people inside this encampment want you dead?
Yes. They have broken a law. They're legally not allowed to be there. They don't have a permit from the school to have that encampment. The school needs to shut them down.
This kid is disgusting.
We see people on the other side that are chanting, death to Israel, death to America. That should wake up America.
Do you believe that if there was no control, they would come out of here and kill you all? Well, I'm in Los Angeles, California.
I'm laughing, not to make light of it, but it's just so stupid. Let's just be honest.
This is a joke. I mean, they're trying to paint it like, you mm-hmm. know, Muslims are here, like if they had the opportunity, Palestinians over there, mm-hmm. that they just want to eradicate all Jews. Mm-hmm. This is their push. This is like ludicrous.
Yeah, so starting with the first clip where he says, I don't care if you come over a fence and you murder a baby in a crib.
Yeah, let's start with that, yes.
Yeah. So first of all, that's a complete lie.
Complete lie. Any evidence for it?
There's zero evidence. So
what's your proof that there's no evidence?
Well, first of all, there's a reported list confirmed now by the Israelis themselves of how many babies died. Mm-hmm. Remember they said first 40 beheaded babies, blah, blah, blah. Actually, babies, like we're talking about when you imagine a baby, you think less than 2 years old. There have only been, between one and three confirmed deaths of babies. And they know the nature of their deaths, and it has nothing to do with a resistance fighter killing a baby in a crib. So this is a complete lie.
But you would think this is Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
That now he's got a platform.
Mm-hmm.
He's also acting as a journalist. He's bringing the news. What does that do to your credibility? I mean, that you're sitting there repeating lies, no verification.
Even the president of the United States is doing this. He's done it many times. He did it the other day speaking at a commencement for a graduation, and he made up another lie. He said, I saw images of someone being killed in this nature. And it's a complete lie. It's completely fabricated. But what is the like Zionist motivation for spreading propaganda? It's the same one that the Nazis had. Which they hate the comparison. Don't compare us to Nazis. That's anti-Semitism. And actually, this new law in Congress, supposedly, is going to make that anti-Semitic. If you compare Zionist behavior to Nazi behavior, you've engaged in anti-Semitism. You'll be fined, punished, jailed, potentially. So, but what did the Nazis say? Joseph Goebbels, the head of their propaganda, tell a lie enough times, and eventually it becomes the truth. So this is what they're doing. They're insisting, despite the wealth of evidence and the wealth of information out there that's readily available, they are just repeating the lie over and over and over again. And Dr. Phil either easily believes the lie and repeats it, or doesn't care. And because a lot of people like Dr. Phil, especially in entertainment, are very close to Zionists who own a significant portion, if not the majority, of the entertainment business, they have an opportunity to resurrect their careers and regain influence and funding and opportunities for new shows simply by taking their position and repeating lies. So the first thing is incredibly irresponsible, because also Dr. Phil is saying this at a time when there's an active genocide taking place. And if he wants to disagree over whether there's a genocide or not, he can just simply pay attention to the genocide case taking place in the International Criminal Court of Justice, in the ICJ. And then now we know the ICC just today issued an arrest warrant for Netanyahu. And
They issued
an arrest warrant, yes,
wow.
For him and the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, because of war crimes. And so, you know, whether you want to call it a genocide or not, doesn't matter. There are war crimes taking place. Call it whatever you want. It's a crime against humanity, however you want to label it. And Dr. Phil, like many others, are repeating justifications to commit those crimes by saying, well, the Palestinians deserve to be genocided, or they deserve these war crimes. Why? Because they're savages. They come over the fence and they kill a baby. Who could kill a baby in a crib? It's the most evil thing to do. Not even animals do that sometimes. Like,
but hold on. Please don't lose your spot. Please hold your spot.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
It just had me thinking. The movie, what's that movie that actually shows witnesses that by a Jewish filmmaker, they made a movie that the baby in the oven, this was actually done. What's the Tantura?
Tantura, yes, yes, yes. This has happened to Palestinians.
Yes, so keep going.
Yes. So basically he's, you know, justifying a genocide. And I was saying that not even animals would do that. Sometimes you see clips where there's a gorilla in a zoo and there's a little child and the gorilla could kill it, but doesn't. So even animals don't kill. So they're dehumanizing Palestinians to the point where they're such nasty creatures.
Amalek.
And they because it's easier to kill someone if you can demonize them or dehumanize them. You're not a human. You don't deserve rights. And you're so evil, you deserve to be killed. And so Dr. Phil is engaging in that, whether he knows it or not, whether he agrees or not, by repeating this lie that a baby was killed in a crib. Now, moving on to the stupid thing about the encampment.
Before you go there, if Dr. Phil invited you, if he'll probably see this. Mm. And now he's like, look, let's talk. Would you go on the Dr. Phil show?
I would consider it. I would suggest to him others more qualified than myself, because I'm someone who repeats what other investigative journalists, not blindly repeat, but I, like Max Blumenthal, Aaron Mate, Ali Abu Nima from Electronic Intifada, I doubt Dr. Phil would ever talk to them, because he could get, you know, he would get into a lot of trouble with the Zionists for doing that. But
he goes on to get like these college kids on. But
yeah.
Why not?
Because they're safe to talk to, because they're Zionists and they have the influence in media and entertainment. And they'll say this is an anti-Semitic trope, but it's not. I mean,
but he was saying in his video, he said he was trying to talk to the pro-truth people who are trying to stop the land grabs and whatnot, but nobody would talk to him.
Mm. Well, I don't know specifically at the encampment if anyone wanted to talk to him. At the protest, there's a couple of reasons why usually the average protester will not talk to media. Uh-huh. And it's because they've organized themselves, and I know this because I partook in this when I was in college, and also I've been to these protests today. When the media tries to talk, the students understand that the media will try and twist what they say. So they say, don't talk to media. You can direct the media to the appointed student representative. Mm. And this is like a PR specialist. I mean, this happens. Corporations do this too. Don't talk to me. Talk to the PR rep, right? So protesters are just engaging in the same practice, which is logical and wise, actually. You shouldn't take someone who is there to support the cause, but doesn't have the ability to speak confidently and articulate. But there's someone who naturally is gifted in doing so. So they're the appointed media contact. Mm-hmm. So maybe they didn't talk to Dr. Phil because they didn't trust him. Or maybe they just thought, if you want to talk to media, talk to our PR rep. So I would consider it, but there are other people more qualified than myself. I would say that, you know, to someone like Dr. Phil, I don't want to question his intent because I don't know what's in his heart. I would just say that whether he knows it or not, he's repeating a lie. He's partaking and engaging in a lie, and it's being used to convince people to allow the genocide to continue. And this is a serious crime, and if he cares about humanity, I think he should think twice about repeating such lies. He should look deeper into it. And if he doesn't want to agree at the end of the day, he maintains his position, fine. But at least, you know, bring someone from the other perspective so that people listening can at least make an informed and rational decision.
We had someone similar to Dr. Phil, but on a news network, Chris Cuomo, if you've heard of him.
Yeah.
And I had an independent investigative journalist from the Gray Zone, Max Blumenthal.
Yes.
On, and Chris
Cuomo. You had them both on.
I actually had Max Blumenthal on. Mm-hmm. And what happened was he came out and said that Chris Cuomo was repeating lies, and he debunked all of the stuff he was saying. He was repeating the same stuff Dr. Phil's repeating.
Yes.
And from there, Chris Cuomo saw this, and then he reached out to us. He reached out to me, and he said, like, don't talk about me coming. I thought it was, I actually respected the way he went about it. He said, let's talk. But then when we put it together,
he didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't want to talk to Max Blumenthal. Uh-huh. They'll talk to, see, Max Blumenthal, if he talks to them, with all due respect to Chris Cuomo, Dr. Phil, whoever, Max Blumenthal will destroy them. With facts, Max Blumenthal will just cut straight to the point because no one knows the information like he does. And Max Blumenthal is one of those people identified by mainstream media, like many other investigative journalists, that they push to the edges, that we don't talk to them. So Max Blumenthal, for example, was supposed to debate Robert F. Kennedy Jr., this candidate running for president.
Yes.
And RFK at first was willing to do it. But then after some time, obviously Zionists reached out and said, don't talk to this person, because they know Max, as a Jew especially himself,
he's Jewish.
Yes. Max Blumenthal will annihilate them. And as a Jew himself, they can't just say you're anti-Semitic. They'll say it, you're a self-hating Jew, but they're obviously wrong about it. It's such a cheap form of slander. So yeah, Max, Aaron Mate, Katie Halper, you know, these are investigative journalists, they are Jews. and they're very informed, and they're pushed to the fringe, or to the margins, not the fringe, sorry, they're pushed to the margins and they're ignored. Mm-hmm. No one will talk to them. So I doubt Dr. Phil would speak to them, but he should. He should.
Are you seeing somewhat of a shift? Okay, so we got that cleared up. These are lies that are being repeated. Mm-hmm. And anyone with any kind of journalistic integrity, mm-hmm. integrity in general, what do you advise? I mean, reporters, I mean, you should do your due diligence. You should do your homework. You should just not just repeat lying points that have been debunked, clearly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the problem is they work for institutions that, and, you know, they hate hearing this, but let's be real. Mainstream media is corporate owned, and they work with the government. So they toe the line, and they repeat whatever the government says. So these journalists or reporters no longer report, they repeat. They get information from the top down.
They do very little thinking. They report, they repeat.
They repeat. They repeat whatever the government line is, whatever the propaganda line is, which comes through the editors-in-chief, and they determine, they essentially manufacture the message and the consent. They provide the parameters. You can ask questions, but you don't ask a question outside of these parameters on either side of the window. And if you do, you see sometimes MSNBC, for example, once they put up this classic image showing loss of Palestinian land since 1948. They had to apologize for providing that context because the Zionists were upset. They apologized and they retracted it, even though it's historical fact. So this is the issue, I think, for all these journalists and reporters. They're not going to do it. I don't have faith that Dr. Phil would do it. You know, I want to go back to his interview with the encampment. The student with the curly hair who's interviewing, you know, this guy is proudly wearing a shirt, IDF logo. These guys are all trained Zionist provocateurs and propagandists. They come up and you know, they can join any institution they want. As Americans, they have the right, just like someone grows up at part of a Muslim nonprofit or organization and they're trained to repeat whatever perspective they have, right? They do the same on the Zionist side. But there's a video of this guy pretending like, you know, students won't let, this guy with the curly hair, he's like, you know, trying to, he has his hands up and he's trying to pass and he's like, look, the students won't let me pass. It's a massive campus. He can get to wherever he wants to go, but he deliberately goes there, turns it on and acts like they're preventing him as a Jew from, you know, practicing his right to study on campus. And that was a complete lie and, you know, he framed it in such a way, but he did that because that's what he's trained to do. And Dr. Phil is interviewing these Zionist students know very well what's happening at these encampments and what's being said. They're saying, we don't want the occupation anymore. We don't want apartheid. We want the university to stop investing in corporations complicit. They take this and they, as narcissistic as they are, deliberately, like you alluded to earlier, projected, you know, certain fantasies or lies or crimes onto others, which is a very sinister thing to do. This is really an evil thing to do, and it's a psychologically twisted thing to do, and the type of people that do it are the type of people trying to avoid accountability. So if I'm guilty of a crime, okay, and what is the crime? Supporting apartheid, let's say, or supporting occupation, supporting violence against the Palestinians. If I want to avoid that accountability, oh no, actually that's not me. You're the one committing the crimes. You're the one who is lying. You're the one who supports genocide. And so they sit there and they pretend, like when he says, do you think if they could kill you, they'd kill you? Yes. This is an absolutely absurd statement. No one is threatening to kill Jews from these encampments. No one is threatening to harm Jews. They are very precise in their language, but they deliberately misconstrue and they fantasize and they lie in order to avoid accountability. That is it.
Because you have Jews also, Jews for Peace and other Jews, mm-hmm. Torah Jews,
yes,
others
absolutely.
Who are actually mm-hmm. Part of this. Isn't that true?
Yes, it's true. They're a minority, but they're a growing minority.
Yeah.
And they're a significant population. And, you know, they maybe look at them as, see, I'm glad you brought up the Torah Jews, because what they do is they look at these leftist Jews, because, you know, there are leftist Jews like in San Francisco who maybe are transgender, same-sex marriage, mm-hmm. etc. So some Jews would say, well, that's not really Jewish, right? Mm-hmm. But then you have the Torah Jews, and they're Orthodox, right?
Yeah.
They're you wouldn't describe them as leftist liberals,
yeah.
But they are against the Zionist project.
And we've had top Jewish rabbis, Shapiro, not Ben Shapiro, but Rabbi Shapiro on the mm-hmm. program. He's one of the top rabbis in America, mm-hmm. also who's against this. You have many Jews, rabbis who I've spoken to, and they also say, not in our name. This is not what mm-hmm. we represent. who are speaking out. Micho Pilit, he's an Israeli Jewish man.
Yeah, son of an Israeli general.
Yes. Yeah. He's also speaking out, putting his neck on the line. This is about justice. Nobody wants their home stolen. Nobody in America would be okay with some person mm-hmm. from Mexico or from Jamaica or from China, Russia, mm-hmm. coming over and saying, hey, you know, this is our land, and camping out in your backyard, let alone putting you in a basement and taking over the first floor.
Yeah, yeah. And drone striking you every now and then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, not for your benefit, but for theirs, controlling what goes in your fridge.
Mm.
How about how much water you can have?
Mm.
Electricity, we'll give it to you, what, once a week?
Yes.
Is that all the things that's happening?
Yeah, yeah. And so much more. And, you know, any human being naturally will want their dignity, their rights, their values. Mm. And, you know, when I was in college, so I was an SJP activist, Students for Justice in Palestine, I was a BDS activist. I used to engage a lot with the Zionist Jews on campus,
mm-hmm.
and many of them support Israel because they were conditioned to. So it's natural, it's understandable. But I felt in their hearts they were good people, and they didn't like the animosity. They didn't like that there were other people out there criticizing their beliefs. Not in a negative way, I'm not criticizing them now. I think naturally as a human, they're just like, this other person, I feel like we're opponents, and I don't like that, I want to connect with them. So on a human level, I felt a genuine desire for connection. And so they would say, let's have lunch, right? And this is called normalization, because the fear is that they use that, they invite you to the Hillel centers on campus, when they bring a propagandist to come talk about how great Israel is or how bad Palestine is, and then, hey, let's take a group picture together with the Israeli flag in the background, and they say, look, we're advocating peace. But these guys weren't doing that to me. They genuinely wanted to connect. So I had lunch with them a couple of times, and one student went on later, you know, he disagreed with me at the time, but I planted a seed for him to consider a different perspective, and later, he ended up going to Israel, and he decided for the first time, let me go see the West Bank. Because he kept hearing about it from the Zionist side, never seeing it. So he actually went, and it shook him. He I wouldn't say he's an anti-Zionist now, but he was like, okay, you know, I understand what these people are complaining about, right? And I also once had a conversation with two Jewish students. They were twin brothers, very interesting kids. And we sat down. And we said, let's do this. It was me and another partner I had in SJP and those two. And I said, let's negotiate a peaceful settlement to this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we started just using our imagination and talking. And it was very idealistic and naive, I'll admit. But we were able to agree. And so we were like, okay, the U.S. provides billions of dollars to the Israeli military. Could the state of Israel become a one-state democracy with equal rights for everyone? Assuming that there is no longer animosity between Palestinians and Israelis, and the threat of violence on both sides has been, you know, reduced and eliminated, essentially. They said, yeah, absolutely. We're open to the idea of one state, equal rights for everyone. Why not? Now, most Zionists would punish them for saying that because they don't want that. They want to control all of the land for themselves. They want to maintain the apartheid state. These two Jewish kids were like, no. Speaking from their heart openly, they were just like, yeah, we're open to that idea. Okay. What about the right of return? You have millions of Palestinian refugees. Would you be open to them coming back? Yes, but how? You know, what land do they take, etc.? Okay, so and how? Who would pay the reparations? So we say, okay, well, the U.S. is giving billions of dollars a year for weapons. If the U.S. is very interested in peace, perhaps the U.S. and the West and the world will collectively donate hundreds of billions of dollars to provide reparations to these Palestinians returning, build them new homes, or pay them to accept citizenship in a different state, whatever, give the option to the Palestinians and offer them a form of reparations. And they were open to that idea as well. So the idea basically is that we were able to imagine and negotiate a peace because there was a genuine intention to do so. And this doesn't exist above the grassroots level. When you get to basically the Zionist politicians and hardliners, those who could actually in the real world negotiate such a thing, they refuse to because their intent is not peace. Their intent is peace for themselves, but they want the Palestinians to live as subservient fourth-class citizens.
Yeah, this brings us back to where we originally started. Third Temple Institute, Takeover, Engineering Prophecies, people like this mindset, they're not talking about having peace.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
No.
Do you see a shift, before we conclude, And I want to stress this again. Palestinians, because you have Christians also, I think Carl Tuckerson, he brought on a priest, and this shook
people. Yeah, Tucker Carlson, yeah.
And the priest was also like, hey, you forgot about us, we're Christian too over here. Mm-hmm. And that was really brave enough for Tuckerson, Carlson, to come out and bring someone on. And then you had Candace Owens also. So do you see a shift? And they waking up to see, like, hold on, Palestinians over there are saying, like, hold on, we don't care. Look, historically, we lived in peace. We don't care if it's our own brother stealing our land. If it's a Muslim stealing it, we're gonna resist.
Yes, absolutely.
Just like you would resist if somebody is coming to take your home, your property. Mm-hmm. Or, what's his name, Johnny from New York comes over. You see the famous video. This is something that's occurred.
If I don't steal it, someone else will.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So now people are starting to wake up. TikTok, social media, net. Candace Owens splits from the Israeli Wire. I'm sorry, Daily Wire. She splits and whatnot. And some of these people who are like strong advocates, Matt Walsh, for freedom of speech and whatnot, it's all getting eradicated. Mm-hmm. What? Because you can't speak up against a particular group of people who are doing an injustice? Mm. So where do you see now? You investigate a lot of this. What do you think, you know, when you look at it from your lens, how do you see, where do you see it going?
I think you're absolutely right. There is a shift. There's been a shift for a long time, but this is a major shift, a rapid shift. And part of it is because this is like the first time a genocide has been documented in such a way. And even with the suppression on social media, it's just impossible to stamp out all the videos and the information from spreading. And so there is a shift. And I think Americans are, like Candace Owens and others, what their real beef is, I think as humans, they do sympathize with the suffering of the Palestinians. Now, they may not support Palestinian armed resistance. They may not support Palestinian self-determination. I don't know exactly what Candace Owens' position is, but I know that her and many others become very upset when they do take an opinion on the situation. Mm-hmm. And the backlash is, you can't talk about that. Mm-hmm. That's when most Americans see, okay, you're not just oppressing Palestinians, now you're oppressing me. Now, you're not committing genocide against me, but you are taking my right to free speech. I can say and think whatever I want. And that, I think, was a big mistake by the Zionists. And they're kind of in a situation where they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. If they allow them to keep talking and sharing their opinion on, hey, maybe you shouldn't kill babies in Palestine and in Gaza. Maybe you shouldn't be bombing homes in densely populated areas. Maybe this reaction is too strong, right? October 7th was... You understand why you have to react, but maybe this is way too far. So letting them talk undermines the Zionists. At the same time, if they don't let them talk, it still undermines the Zionists. So they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. It's a catch-22 sort of. And they're stuck. And I think what they have done, they've made a big mistake. The important shift is they've exposed how much power they have. We as Muslims, paying attention to Palestine for decades, have always known how much power the Zionists have and what they're willing to do with that power. They're willing to silence you and oppress you and even get you deplatformed, debanked, put you in jail, fine you. They try to ruin your life in any way you can to prevent you from criticizing Israel. Because they are censoring people on social media and, you know, messing with people like Candace Owens on the Daily Wire, affecting her career and silencing many other Americans, they are... exposing how much power they have and what they're willing to do with it. And Americans are very big on personal freedoms, right? Don't tread on me. That this spirit exists till today and manifests itself in different ways. If I want to share my opinion, I'm going to do so. Even if I'm wrong, I don't care, right? It's my right to say whatever I want. In this case, these people are not wrong when they criticize Israel. But yes, I think Americans feel like you are oppressing me now. And I think that was a very big mistake on the Zionists. And I think on the right and conservative America, for the first time, we're seeing this big gap. And there's a big conversation between America first and Israel first. And this battle has basically undermined the influence of the Daily Wire. And I think it's going to continue to grow and to spread. And yeah, I think the Zionists have made a huge mistake. And, you know, they won't fall apart as a Zionist project immediately, but I think their days are numbered, and it could be anywhere between 5 to 20 years, 30 years, God knows. But it's falling apart. It's unraveling before our eyes, I think.
And I want people to let that sink in, because you have the Constitution, which protects freedom of religion, and freedom of speech, that you can go ahead and even criticize your own government if you feel they're going astray, to try to bring back people to justice, to peace. But now with the laws that are trying to be passed, that now, okay, you can criticize your own country, but you can't criticize
another country. Yeah, can you imagine the absurdity?
Let that sink in, right?
Yeah, that's an excellent point to bring up. They're passing laws for this now, and it's unconstitutional. The Supreme Court might strike it down, but if there's any group in America that could undermine the Constitution with the amount of privilege and influence and power they have, it's the Zionists. So I hope they don't succeed, but they could.
And I want people to know, again, we've reiterated this, and we'll before we conclude, as a Muslim, I'm sure you'd agree, we'd love to have peace with all of our neighbors. Mm-hmm. We want peace in Jerusalem. And when Muslims were ruling at that time, there was a peace, right? And Muslims, and Islam, the Quran doesn't teach us to just hate people. It's actually anti-Islam to go ahead and hate someone because they're a Jew, because they're a Christian, you know, because a Muslim's allowed to actually marry a Jew or a Christian. A Muslim is also one who believes in Moses, who by ethnicity he was a Jew, but we believe by submission to the will of God made him a Muslim. And same thing with Jesus. He was by ethnicity a Jew, but by submission to the will of God, that means Muslim. So we love them. Yes, so it would be anti-Islam to go ahead and just hate someone because they're Jew or Muslim. So you should be really angry that you've been duped and fooled and programmed to believe such stupidity, ludicrousy. And I want to thank you for coming on. That's Propaganda Co.
Propaganda and Co. Yeah, that's correct. Well, thank you so much for having me on. May Allah reward you for all the work that you do and your audience as well. May Allah bless them. And you're absolutely right. You know, as Muslims, we do love and respect all humanity, especially especially Jews and Christians. As people of the book, we feel connected to them through our shared connection, you know, with the Prophet Abraham and all the prophets. So, and inshallah, there will be peace, you know, and more peace and more love. There is peace already, you know. It's in different parts of the world, and personally, you know, between individuals on earth, of course, there are peace already between Muslims and Jews and Christians, but hopefully there will be more soon. And I think the Zionist Project, unfortunately, has been the source and cause of much of the animosity between Muslims and Christians and Jews, and hopefully it comes to an end soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, brother.
Jazakallah khair.
Oh, yeah. Assalamu alaikum. So you heard it here. We don't hate you. We want the best for you. And you know what? I'm going to give you a gift. You can go to thedeanshow.com and I'm going to get you this book. It's called The Quran for free. And you can judge for yourself. Judge for yourself. Go to the website, put your information in. We'll get it to you for free. You don't have to pay for anything. And find in there where it tells you what Dr. Phil's trying to push on you and all the other pundits out there. And visit a mosque, call us, 1-800-662-4752. We got a number. Don't just be a troll on the keyboard. Make the human connection. Talk, visit with us. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum. We know there are many benefits to the use of black seed according to the authentic statements of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. That's why I use the black seed by Tasneem, and 50% of the profits from your order will go towards establishing the Deen Center, the Masjid and Mega Dawah Center. Use promo code The Deen Show for 15% off.